Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Lindsay W., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater here in Houston, Texas. Today is Thursday, May 8th, 2025, and today we are reading from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We are in the chapter Working with Others on page 96, the first paragraph. Do not be discouraged if your prospect, through one paragraph ending, deprived many others who have since recovered of their chance. And we will be commenting on that one paragraph. Today's readers are, for the 12 steps, Kelsey C., the 12 traditions, Christine G., and our readers of the text are Elena C., Hoodie R., and our backup reader is Lynn S. The reference numbers for yesterday, Wednesday, May 7th, are the following: 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, 22,413, that's 22413, and the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, 22,414, 22414. OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose: to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. A Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Kelsey C. to please read the 12 steps.
Good morning. I'm Kelsey C., recovered compulsive overeater in California. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. Number one, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Number two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Number three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Number four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Number five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Number six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Number seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Number eight, made a list of all persons we have harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Number nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Number 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Number 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Thank you for letting me be of service. Pass.
Thank you so much, Kelsey C., and I will now ask Christine G. to read the 12 traditions.
Good morning. This is Christine G. in Connecticut, recovered compulsive overeater. Thank you so much for allowing me to be of service. The 12 traditions. Number one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Have a great day.
Thank you so much, Christine G. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we're discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There's no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speakers should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous in the chapter Working with Others on page 96, the first paragraph. Do not be discouraged if your prospect, through one paragraph ending, deprived many others who have since recovered of their chance. And I will now ask Elena C. to begin reading. Good morning, Elena.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
My name is Elena C. from South Carolina. I'm so honored to read today. Do not be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. Search out another alcoholic and try again. You're sure to find someone desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you offer. We find it a waste of time to keep chasing a man who cannot or will not work with you. If you leave such a person alone, he may soon become convinced that he cannot recover by himself. To spend too much time on any one situation is to deny some other alcoholic an opportunity to live and be happy. One of our fellowship failed entirely with his first dozen prospects. He often says that if he had continued to work on them, he might have deprived many others who have since recovered of their chance. So I wrote in the margin at that time when I read this chapter with my former sponsor that it was Bill W. who failed with 12 protege, she said. Well, not fail, but they couldn't recover. And yes, it's a powerful paragraph because it talks about what I hear is just hands off sponsorship. Like what I can offer is my own experience, strength, and hope, the way I was sponsored, the way that I require other people whom I sponsor to do the work, like I did the work. And then that's all I can do. I'm much of a I'm a different sponsor than what the sponsor I used to be. I think I was more controlling, so I probably have to make amends to some people if they're on the line, because that's all I knew, you know. But today I base my sponsorship on encouragement, niceness, compassion. You know, I have people who have, like, are relapsing. And, you know, I need to remember that I need to be in conscious contact when I speak about that, because it's a cunning and baffling disease. Because people, that's just what it is. It's very, very difficult. Very, very difficult. And there's no point in my being harsh about that. So, and another thing is, don't chase people, because I need to hold space for them to work with their higher power, and maybe like things can need to get worse before they get better. Like the gift of desperation, I need not interfere in their journey. I need to hold space, and be there if they reach back out, you know. And because if I interfere, it's into fear. I deprive them of their own relationship with their own higher power and their own amazing gift of desperation that brought me in this room. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Elena C. in South Carolina, for getting us started. And although we value your experience, we do ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So who would like to share on this paragraph this morning?
Harlan G.
PG. Riska R. from Baltimore.
Melissa C.
I got Harlan G, Katie G. I believe I also heard Amy G. I heard Riska R and Melissa C. Who else?
Dara F.
Option Dara.
Kathy N.
Gotcha, Kathy. Great. Let's start with this lineup. I've got Harlan G, Katie G, Amy G, Riska R, Melissa C, Dara F, and Kathy N. So Harlan G, you are up, followed by Katie G.
Thanks, Lindsay. Thanks for your service today. I'm Harlan G. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I live in Scottsdale, Arizona. This paragraph is extremely important, and I point sponsees and people when I'm doing Q&A, I point people to this paragraph all the time. This paragraph is just fantastic. One of the biggest mistakes I made in sponsoring is I encountered people who were looking for a membership card to OA. In other words, they had no intention of doing this, no intention of doing any of this. But they wanted to feel like part of the crowd, and they wanted to have a sponsor. But they weren't going to do this. I had to let these people go. I am not responsible for finding them another sponsor. I'm not responsible for anything. And if there's anything I've learned about sponsorship, it's that I have to be, as a recovered person, I have to be the adult in the room. I have to be the sponsor, and I can't let the tail wag the dog. And if a person isn't doing what they need to do, I need to let them go. And one of the things that people have pointed out through the years is page 35 at the bottom. It says here about our friend that we shall call Jim. And they say that we told him what we knew of alcoholism and the answer we had found. He made a beginning. His family was reassembled, and he began to work as a salesman for the business he had lost through his drinking. But if you look at this paragraph, it's about Jim. It was really Ralph Furlong, but he failed to, he didn't do what he was supposed to do. So it says here, if you read it you don't read it so good, you would think that they kind of stuck with him. But if you look at it, it doesn't say, I told him what I knew. I did this. It says, we. In other words, they passed Jim around. They said, I can't sponsor you. You're not doing what I need you to do. You've gotten drunk a half a dozen times. So other people sponsored him. Sometimes the best thing I can do for a person is give them a wake-up call that says what they're doing is not okay, or what they're not doing is okay. And I have to send that signal by saying to that person, we need to part company. It doesn't mean I have to be their enemy. It doesn't mean I have to put a curse on them or whatever that might be. I can be friendly. I can be a friend. I can be whatever. Maybe not a friend, but I can be whatever. But the bottom line is I have to send out the signals that say this is the way to recovery. And if you're going north, and you have to go north, but you're going south, I have to call to your attention in the strongest possible way, you're going in the wrong direction. And if I co-sign your disease, if I allow you to do that, and I just keep going with you and going with you, I'm not helping me, and I'm not helping you. And my job is to help you. And Lindsay, thanks for your service. With that, I will pass. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Harlan G. in Arizona. And the next up is Katie G., followed by Amy G. Good morning, Katie.
Good morning, Lindsay. Katie G., recovered in Boston. Yeah, I love that it says accept with eagerness.
Hey, we're having a hard time hearing you. You're going in and out pretty badly.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Nope. Not very well. Maybe I'll go to Amy G. and then come back to you and see if we have a better connection.
Sorry to waste time. Can you hear me now?
Nope. We can't.
Okay,
it's very, yeah. Okay. Okay, that sounds good. I'll come back to you.
Okay.
All right. Amy G., you are up next, followed by Rivka R.
Good morning. Thank you, Lindsay. My name is Amy G. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Maryland. Dare I ask, am I clear? Can you hear me now?
We can. We can hear you.
Okay. Super. Yeah, thanks, everyone, for getting us started. Yes, I agree. This is a very important paragraph, and I've been blessed to be able to sponsor for a couple of decades now, and what I have found is this is such a cunning, baffling, and powerful disease that, you know, and it's so relapse prone, and the idea is that I'm supposed to be suiting up and showing up and getting on the firing lines and doing my job to be recovered and to be able to be a sponsor, but that for every, say, 8 or 10 people that I sponsor, usually only around 1 or 2 people get it. I mean, that's the statistic. At least that's how it works for me over these last 30-some years. And I have to be, I mean, sometimes I believe that God puts me there to just be a phone call versus making them my sponsees. Sometimes I'm a seed planter. Sometimes I'm a message carrier for a couple of calls. And sometimes I sponsor and I become a part of God's, my higher powers, life-transforming process of sponsoring someone and watching them grow and change and become recovered. I never know what that's going to be when someone asks me to be their sponsor. I leave that to God, but what I don't do is I don't water down the message. I don't change what these first 164 pages say. I don't do any of that. I just lay the spiritual kit of tools at their feet, and it's their choice to pick it up. One of my favorite slogans is, I love you, but I hate the disease, and I refuse to enable, I refuse to enable the disease anymore. And if the person, I mean, sometimes when you pick up a sponsee, you know, it may be frothy emotional appeal. I don't know. And one of the best things that I have learned to do over the years is to lay out how it is that I sponsor, what I'm going to do, what I'm expecting them to do, the work that is going to be ahead of us. And I tell them to think about it and call me back if this is something that they really think they want to do. And sometimes as we move along the process, You know, I'm not the sponsor for them. And I do. I stand in the way of someone else that maybe I communicate with better, or that someone that is not yet at, someone that is desperate enough and ready for this program. And usually that reveals itself pretty quickly in a couple of months, whether or not that is someone that I should be sponsoring. And I hate to sound cut and dry about it, but the reality of this relapse-prone disease is that some are not ready, some are not compulsive overeaters, and some are desperate and doomed enough yet to work this program. And I want to be on the firing line for those who are. And with that, I will pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Amy G. in Maryland. And let's go back to Katie G. Let's see if we can hear you clearly. Hi, Katie.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes, that's perfect.
Oh, delightful. Thank you, Lindsay, for your service. Great meeting, everybody. I love that it says accept with eagerness what you have to offer. And eager is anxious, keen, avid, enthusiastic, ardent, and desirous. I wasn't eager in the beginning. I wanted a meal plan and I wanted to be thin. And again, and I know I said this the other day, but I'm so grateful for the women in recovery who told me no, who said, actually, you know, that exercise bulimia that you're engaging in, that's not okay. I will say that I do feel like the disease is a great persuader. For me, the more I smashed against the disease, the better, the more eager I got. And I have to remember, sponsoring isn't about notches on the belt. Like for a long time, I thought, okay, if I have 10 sponsees, if I take 50 women through the book, that's going to be proof that I'm good enough, right? That I'm connected with God, that I'm on fire for the book. And that's not my experience. I haven't had an experience where I carry 10 women at a time. I can't. I have other things going on in my life. And for me, like what this paragraph reminds me is that I'm not responsible for the outcome. I am responsible for the message. I am responsible for teaching, for me, what entire abstinence means. I am responsible to go through the doctor's opinion and look at addictive foods, ingredients, and behaviors. And if you work with me, then I'm going to talk about my own addictive food behaviors, like gum, like exercise bulimia, like getting on the scale compulsively. Because this isn't a diet and weight loss program for me. This is a life and death program. And that's the other thing. I hate to say this, but if I am hearing a sponsee for months and months and months who's living in relapse, there is no solution. And although I am connected with God, it brings me down. And I know that that's not very healthy to stay, but it's true. And this disease wants me dead and will settle for me eating. And I can't afford that today. So I'm just grateful that I'm not responsible for any outcome. I'm not responsible for 100 notches on the belt for the number of sponsees that I carry. I am responsible for carrying the message. I am responsible for putting women's hands in God's, and because that's what I have. And I just pray that I can continue to have my own eagerness to carry this message and to live in recovery one day at a time. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Katie G. in Massachusetts. And then we've got Rivka R. followed by Melissa C. Good morning, Rivka.
Good morning, everybody. And thank you, Lindsay, for your service. And it is Rivka R., gratefully recovering compulsive overeater in Baltimore, Maryland. Thank you, everyone, for the great shares. And yes, there is another Rivka R. on the line. She's from New Jersey, so shout out to her. Just looking at the words desperate enough. So it doesn't have to be dramatic. Like it doesn't have to come after a huge binge. For me, when I came back the last time, about 4 years ago, it was just a deep, deep realization that my life was over. Like I could not live and be happy. And there was nothing I could do or would ever be able to do on my own. It was like this nauseating experience of like that quicksand, like extending all around me. And so, you know, I made that call to someone I had met a few years before at the the last Vision Convention, and thank God she had time, and I did what she asked, and made God the priority, and I learned to trust, not to be afraid of saying certain things, like, you know, thy will, not mine, be done. And it was, thank God, it was God's time for me to really grasp a deeper recovery. I saw this great meme. It said, fear is what if, and faith is even if. Like, I was so stuck in the what if, you know, what if I don't have enough food? What if I want more? What if I don't get what I want? You know, and listening on this line, like, I started to understand that faith is even if my meal looks small, I have enough. Like, even if I want more, I'm okay. You know, I can wait a few minutes and the urge will pass. Like, even if I don't get what I want, God has a better plan. Like, sanity being restored for me means that I don't have to listen to the what if anymore. The what if, that it's the lies my lower brain is telling me. You know, I can connect with the truth that even if, whatever happens, no matter what, God's taking care of me and I'm never alone. And Harlan can give a Yiddish word. I'm going to give a Hebrew word. Hebrew word for faith is emunah. And it comes from the word that means to practice. So I have the opportunity to live and be happy today because of this program and these 12 steps that teach me how to practice faith and teach me how to rely on God. And the word emunah also has the word amen in it, which means it's a truth. And the truth is that helping someone reconnect with their soul, because that's what the disease robbed me of, like, and being able to put their hand in God's hand, like, you know, having faith, being able to see the good instead of living in the food and resentment and fear, like, that is the greatest joy. And just very grateful. Thank you so much. I pass.
Thank you, Rivka R. in Maryland. And the next up is Melissa C., followed by Dara F. and Kathy N. Good morning, Melissa.
Hey, good morning, Lindsay. Thanks so much for your service this morning. I'm Melissa C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I live in New York. And, yeah, I mean, I love this paragraph. And, of course, it makes me think about, you know, the like Harlan had mentioned about Jim. And I think, you know, for myself, there's a difference between someone who is responding, who clearly wants this and who might need some help, right? And somebody who's like not eager, and I look at that ego word and I think that is crucial. And, you know, like someone else had mentioned, eagerness is essential. You know, I think my experience has been for myself and for people I've worked with, there is this like sweet spot in a sponsee, and when they almost are doing the work themselves, they want it so badly. Like, I know I accepted with eagerness what was being, you know, handed to me, because I had run out of options. I was so freaking desperate. I said if my sponsor would have asked me to, like, crawl across the glass, I would have done it. I would have done anything, because I couldn't stand living the way that I was living another moment. And I think, you know, one of the greatest challenges is when I see someone who I'm working with who does not feel that way about their own circumstances, and I look at their circumstances and I think, how the hell are you living like this anymore? Like, why aren't you eager? And I start to feel eager for them. That is dangerous. That, for me, is like I am starting to tread into the area where I am working on them, and that is not my job. It says, you know, here that if he had worked on them. Well, I'm not a surgeon. I don't work on people, and I'm not God. God works on people. The disease works on people. This chapter is working with others. So that means that the person has to be eagerly working, has to be, you know, and for myself, like, I have a way that worked for me. Yes, it's the following these directions in this book, but I required handrails. I required tools. The tools of the program helped me put the steps into application. I needed them. And so that is something that gives me an indication if someone really is eager to do this. If they are doing all, you know, whatever you want to call it, I've called it non-negotiables, because for me, I can't negotiate. If I'm negotiating, I'm not eager. And that was my experience. You know, I gave up negotiating. I accepted with willingness and enthusiasm what was being offered to me. For me, I think about it like this. The life jacket was thrown at me. I was drowning. I didn't care what color the life vest was anymore. I didn't care if it was going to strap between my legs or over my head. I just wanted relief. And if I'm meeting someone and they're not at that point, I can love them. I can send them my heartfelt prayers, but I can't work on them. And that's always a lesson for me to learn. And with that, I pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Melissa C. in New York. And then next up, we have Dara F., followed by Kathy N. Good morning, Dara.
Hi, this is Dara F. in Manassas, Virginia, recovered compulsive overeater. And I highlighted a couple of sentences out of this paragraph on search out another alcoholic and try again. You are sure to find someone desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you offer. And also, to spend too much time on any one situation is to deny some other alcoholic an opportunity to live and be happy. And I'm glad this paragraph is in here because first thing, I feel like it alleviates the responsibility of me having to get that person well. I am there to share my experience, strength, and hope in a program that works for me. And if that person is ready for it, great. If they're not ready for it, also great. But it's not my responsibility. I'm not their savior. I'm not their higher power. The other thing is I tend to be a people pleaser. And so if somebody is not doing the work, is not showing that they care, oftentimes they'll drop off. I don't need to do anything. But if they're willing to make the phone call, but they're not willing to do the work, then comes the hard part where I have to tell them what I consider to be the truth or my truth. And my truth is, if you're not going to do the work, I can't work with you. That doesn't mean I never stay with somebody who has slips. But there's a difference for me between somebody that I can tell when somebody has willingness and just they're missing some part of their program, or when they don't get it, or I feel I can tell that, or my higher power gives me an inkling. And if I really feel they're not getting it or don't want what I have, or I can't communicate with them and for whatever reason, this paragraph gives me permission to tell the truth and to be authentic with myself and my higher power, which I believe is a gift. So thank you so much for letting me share. And I pass.
Thank you. Thank you, Dara F. in Virginia. And then we'll have Kathy N. and then take another lineup. So good morning, Kathy.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Kathy N. I'm calling in from Massachusetts, a compulsive overeater. I wish when I first came into this program in 2009, my sponsor, who had been my best friend in another program whom I saw losing weight, it was just sending her the food plan every day and losing weight and going to a couple of meetings a week. And so 2020, when I was going down the rabbit hole again, and I got a sponsor and we went through the big book, and she said, okay, now you got to sponsor people. And my self-esteem was like a little low, like, well, I can't do that. Then I got some sponsors, and there was one that, you know, had I had read the big book with her, I read this page with her or paid attention to it myself, I would have let go with love. We got stuck on a third step for almost a year. And I kept trying and trying and trying and being frustrated and frustrated. And finally, a couple of years later, because I was holding on like a dog to a bone, my food got wonky, so I reset my abstinence date, so I had to let her go. And I found since then, you know, I've taken them through the big book. And if I call them, or if they don't call me, I don't chase them down. I don't try to have them see it my way. I find that it's better working with others that I do not try to drill down their throats what was given to me. I try, you know, I can be also controlling as well. And I want you to be good. I want you to be well. And like in the beginning, back when Bill started out, the people were getting drunk, and he came home to Lois one day and said, "They're not staying sober." She said, "But you are." And that's, you know, ideally, you know, they may not stay abstinent, but I stay abstinent. And there was great joy in working with others, but if they're resistant, I can't give them what I have, even though I want them to have it. I'm working with somebody now, and we got to the fourth step. I saw the wall go up, but I was gentle. The wall went down, and we're going to do the fifth step. Had the wall stayed up, I just would have parted our ways and moved on with another. I can't keep it unless I give it away, and I can't make a person feel my joy and my gratitude. They've got to get it on their own, you know. And I want you to like me, but to what extent? Because then it will make me sick, and it's not about that. You know, I've had people, you know, since this past 5 years, that, you know, they get another sponsor, they get abstinent another way. And it's not all about me. And I just keep trying, you know, I give out my phone number, I go on meetings, I leave my numbers, and people call me and I work with them to the extent they want to be worked with. And some people just want a food plan. They just want somebody to talk to. Okay. And I give them that time and then I move on. And thank you so much for allowing me to share. I will mute.
Thank you, Kathy N. in Massachusetts. And before we take our next lineup, I'll just remind everybody where we are this morning. So we are in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous in the chapter Working with Others on page 96, the first paragraph. Do not be discouraged if your prospect, through that one paragraph ending, deprived many others who have since recovered of their chance. Who else would like to share this morning?
Jeannie B.
Anne Marie M.
Crystal
Ashley
R.
S.
Yvette L.
Anne Marie M.
Amy B., Anne Marie M., Crystal R., and Yvette L. I know I missed somebody in there.
Jeannie G.
I gotcha. I think we have time for one more in this lineup. Yeah. If anybody else. Who was it, S? Was someone S? Ashley. Okay. Gotcha. So here's who I have. Here's who I've got. Amy B., Anne Marie M., Crystal R., Yvette L., Janie G., and Ashley S. I hope I got all those names right. So let's start with Amy B., and then followed by Anne Marie. And let us know where you're calling from, please. Good morning, Amy. Amy B., star one to unmute. We don't hear you.
Thank you. I thought I was unmuted. This is Jeannie B., J-E-A-N-N-I-E-B from Florida. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. This morning after my morning prayer time, I heard, listen to the meeting anew. I've been listening and here for 3 years. And one of the things I heard was in the directions that we are sharing what the big book means to us. And when I heard this beautiful paragraph, I thought, well, I know what this means to me. Stop chasing people down. Stop, when a door is half closed or closing, don't chase after because you know and you want for them. I am saying you to myself, Jeannie, don't do that. Because that, for me, is there are people, and I just, this really adapts to my professional life as a therapist, too, is I want people, I see what's going on. I know what's going on. I know what can help them. And I want to convince them. That's my thing. I'm trying to convince them. Just come more often. I want to teach you this. I want to show you that. And it's the same thing with program is well, can't you see this? Don't you see that? And convincing people is not the way. This paragraph tells me convincing people is not the way. Expressing it calmly, expressing it, and then they take it or they don't. Letting people have the freedom to come and go, letting them do it in their time, letting God work on them in God's time, higher power's time, and just releasing it. Not having that attachment, but having a healthy detachment, a healthy detachment, and just letting that flow in and out. They say golfers say that. You don't want to grip the club. I'm not even a golfer. But you just want to, like, let it be. Let it flow in and out. And when I can have that healthy detachment, that is my journey. That is my growth. I need to have a healthy detachment in every area of my life in addition to my program and my sponsees. Thank you so much. I pass.
Thank you, Jeannie B. in Florida. And the next up is Anne Marie M., followed by Crystal R. Hi, Anne Marie.
Thank you so much for taking this meeting. This is Anne Marie M. in South Carolina. I am gratefully, miraculously recovering from compulsive overeating, and I live in South Carolina. The word that stands out to me is that word chasing. That's what I need to ask myself when I'm sponsoring. Am I chasing this person? Am I calling this person, you know, day after day, wondering where they are? Why didn't they call me when they said they were going to call me? That's what I really believe that this paragraph is trying to get across, is that we don't chase anyone. And I was just thinking about, you know, when it was just mentioned about the life preserver, throwing the life preserver over. You know, I just think about me being on a ship and looking over the edge, and there's somebody drowning, and, you know, I grab on and to them and I throw them a rope, but, you know, the rope slips out of their hands and they're going under, and I'm not going to say, hey, you know, they're going under. This is like the third time they've went under. I'm not going to bother with them anymore. If they keep on grabbing for that rope, if they keep on asking for help, I'm here to help them. I'm here to do God's work. And God wants me to be of service to him. I like thinking of myself as being God's servant. I know that doesn't sit well with a lot of people, but it's kind of like being, you know, an agent for the principal or the actor. You know, I'm just here to do the work that God has given me to do. And I believe that somebody, I think, just got in the car with this, like, beeping noise, or maybe, I'm not sure, I was moving around. But anyway, so if that puts someone in my path, I just trust God. I ask God for direction. And to me, that's the most important thing, is my reliance on God. You know, God, do I keep on, you know, I'm not going to chase the person, you know, and have I done everything that I could possibly do for this person? And if not, God, what else can I do? Show me, dear Lord, where I can be more helpful to him or her. And I get guidance. And I get guidance from my sponsor. I get guidance from other people. I get guidance from listening to other people on the line, how they help other people. But for me, just to tell somebody, hey, you've gone under too many times. Nope. There's nothing else I can do. You know, I'll throw them as many life preservers as I can. You know, I'll throw them the rope. But as long as they are trying, you know, and they're not asking me, you know, I'd rather have the green life preserver. As long as they're not being like that, but chasing. That's the word I lean on. I look at. So I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Anne Marie M. in South Carolina. And the next up is Crystal R., followed by Yvette L. Good morning, Crystal.
Good morning. This is Crystal R., recovered compulsive overeater from Toronto. I was just thinking back to my time sponsoring people, and I realized I hate telling sponsees that I'm going to stop working with them. I hate it. I hate confrontation. It just, it feels like, I don't know, somehow it feels like I'm being rejected and I'm rejected. I'm breaking up with like a romantic partner. So I do like these, I used to do these really evasive things, you know, like I would say things like, you know, maybe I'm just not the right sponsor for you, which is basically, you know, it's not you, it's me. Or I'll say something like, you know, I'm not able to sponsor you right now. Kind of like, I need to focus on myself. Or we're not a good fit, or the timing is not right, like come back when you have more time or something. And at one point, you know, I had to stop and realize, like, this is not my boyfriend. This is not a rejection. This is a person just like me who is in a dangerous, fatal situation, and many times they cannot see it because this disease blinds us and it lulls us with comfort. So I need to point out the danger. So saying things like that sends a completely wrong message to my sponsees. It tells them that in order to recover, you need to follow my rules, or you need to be careful not to offend me. You hurt my feelings. Or you can only recover if you click with your personality of your sponsor. You have to find the exact right sponsor, and only then you can recover. You know, and someone once taught me that telling the sponsee the truth is my last act of kindness and courage to them. If that's the last time I see them, it's my last opportunity to be kind and to have courage. And so I tell them, what is the one thing that's keeping them from recovery? And it's not something that they're powerless over, like, oh, you picked up the food as an example. Instead, it'll be specific. It'll be like, you know, I'm noticing that you're not willing to plan your meals ahead of time, or you're not willing to make time for prayer and meditation in the morning. Or, you know, we've set up 3 calls so far and you haven't called me all 3 times. You know, I will also make sure I help them know that it's not about my rules. It's not like, well, my rule is you call me here and you do this and you plan your meals and you make the calls. It's the disease is showing you that whenever you do this, it doesn't work. So if you keep doing that, then we know what's going to happen. So it's not about me and my rules. It's what their disease is showing them. And finally, I kind of bring it back to my experience. So it's not like I'm on a hilltop and like I was willing to do this and you are not willing to do this. It was like, I get it. This sucks. I didn't want to do it either. But I realized that until I was willing to plan my meals, or, you know, follow directions, or do the step work writing, or make the calls, or pray every morning, even sometimes wake up earlier than I was waking up, I couldn't recover. And I stayed stuck until I was willing to do that simple thing that seemed so small, but for some reason was indispensable to my recovery. And I found it's the hardest thing to tell a person the truth with kindness and love, but I get better at it each day because God helps me. Thanks for letting me share my path.
Thank you so much, Crystal R. in Toronto, Canada. And then next up is Yvette L., followed by Janie G. Hi, Yvette.
Good morning. My name is Yvette L., and I'm a very grateful recovered compulsive overeater in Connecticut. And I love this paragraph and talking about, basically chasing after people. And I certainly have gone through, you know, a period where I did that, trying to convince people to keep going, keep moving forward. And gratefully, I don't have that approach anymore. I do trust my higher power to guide me. I don't have a way, quote unquote, that I sponsor because I don't know what somebody's journey is supposed to look like. I don't know what my role is supposed to be in somebody's life. I think someone earlier talked about, you know, maybe it's one conversation, maybe it's many conversations. I don't know that at the beginning. So I don't have a way that I sponsor. I do trust that I'll be guided as I work with the individual, and that's been my experience, that I have been guided. There are things that I do with one person that I may not have ever done with somebody else as I'm guided by this power. And I think the most important thing, that I can offer is my own experience. I offer honesty. Some people don't want that, and that's okay. It's not going to change the fact that I am honest. This is a beast of a disease, and if I'm not honest with somebody, I'm, not being helpful to them. And that is my goal, is to try to be helpful I know, you know, from my own experience, you know, it took me basically 25 years to surrender. And when I did, you know, and followed the instructions, I recovered just as I was promised in the big book. But it did take me, you know, 25 years in these rooms before I was, you know, desperate and willing enough to do. And you know, I was, you know, really, really afraid. I had no idea how much fear was just beneath the surface. So, like I said, I don't know what my role is supposed to be when I start to work with someone. I don't know who's really ready. I don't say no when anybody asks me because I don't know who's ready. And I was guided to that by someone on this line. And while it was scary when I started that, I did trust that my higher power that that was an approach that was going to work for me. And several years later, it has worked for me. So I'm just so grateful that I never left. That was the one thing I heard over and over again in 92, just don't leave. So I was in the right place when, you know, when it was time. So thanks for letting me share. I'll pass.
Thank you, Yvette L. in Connecticut. And then next up, we have Janie G. And then we'll probably have time for a short share, Ashley S. So, Janie G., please go ahead and share with us.
Good morning, my fellows. It's Janie G. in Michigan. And, man, I've heard some really good stuff today. I've started taking notes during the meetings now to keep my attention because I've always prided myself on being a multitasker. So this paragraph makes me think in two directions, one of me being a sponsee, and one, now again, I am back sponsoring after a relapse and going through the steps again, gratefully recovered again, thanks to the grace of God and a very hands-off sponsor. And this has made me realize that the people who let me go, the sponsors who, when I was doing the work and wanted to do the work but just couldn't stay abstinent, you know, it did hurt and it did feel like a breakup and it did feel like rejection. But immediately afterwards, the willingness that came and how God had another person right there. And it reminds me as a sponsor that I am not playing God in this. Again, I'm not seeking an effect by being a sponsor. I have to be on guard that I am not in my disease, even when I am in a recovered state and sponsoring. It's not my job to carry anyone or to work on someone. They have to be willing to let God do the work on them as they do the work. And as we say, faith without works is dead. But if I waste my time trying to carry someone, like drag a mule through the mud is what it's felt like before, again, both on the mule and the one dragging, that's not God's will for me. That's me trying to force a solution. And if I'm living in the promises, if I'm living in recovery, that's not my spiritually centered state. So that's my self-will, and I have to be on guard with that and be working my program. I think I, too, have seen it in the past, just like notches in my belt, sponsoring four people at one time and getting caught up in the busyness and the hecticness and then neglecting my own time with the Lord and my own recovery needs and also my own family. So I don't have to keep chasing a person who cannot do this work, who's not willing to do this work. And it's not up to me to diagnose them as to why. I have to stay on my own square, stay in my own lane, work my own program. And if I am closely connected with God in my 11th step and asking for his will for my life, I can clearly see that is not his will for my life.
That's time.
So I just thank God for that, that this is a program of attraction, not promotion. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Janie G. in Michigan. And Ashley S., we have time for a one-minute share if you'd like to take us out.
I'll take this out if you don't mind to tell me when the time is up.
I sure will.
Ashley F. recovered in Kentucky, and I think that the thing that I want to share is how clear is kind, and the greatest gift that has been given to me, there are really two, but honestly, the one that parlayed me into actual recovery is when a wonderful human said to me, "This is just not working," and let me go. And I could hear in her voice how hard it was for her to say that to me. And I had all, like, there was no part of me that felt anything other than just like, "Oh, okay, great." The beautiful thing is that was in May of 2022, after having been in the program 16 years. And it parlayed me by October of 2022 to hear the message. It's important.
That's time.
Thank you. I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Ashley S. in Kentucky. And thank you to everyone who shared. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following closing. The share ID for today, Thursday, May 8th, is 22,416, 22416. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Would Hoodie R. please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Thank you so much, Lindsay. And that was a beautiful meeting. Thank you. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.